the State of Florida Sports Podcast, presented by the USA Today Network. Here's your host, Tim Walters.
We've made it through another year. 2022 is coming to a close, and the hope of a new year is upon us. But before we jump into 2023, I want to take a look back this week to the year that was in sports in the state of Florida in 2022. Florida State football has reemerged from years of futility. Florida endured its first season under new head coach Billy Napier. The Miami Dolphins found offensive relevance. The Jacksonville Jaguars began moving past the Urban Meyer disaster. Tom Brady seemingly chose football over family. The Tampa Bay Rays made the playoffs again. The Marlins still stink, and they finally moved on from Don Mattingly. The Tampa Bay Lightning again played in the Stanley Cup Finals, only to lose to Colorado. The list goes on and on. In a moment, I'll bring in Gainesville Sun columnist David Whitley, a sports jack-of-all-trades, and we'll look back at some of these storylines and see how they translate to the future. Hello again, everybody. I'm Tim Walters, and thank you once again for joining me on the State of Florida Sports Podcast, powered by the USA Today Network. This podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. Our Florida network consists of 17 news sites that encompass the state. We encourage you to subscribe to your hometown newspaper, and of course this podcast, to help support the incredible journalism done by our talented staffs. It's hard to know where to begin given all the big events that happened in sports this year. Maybe Mr. David Whitley, Gainesville Sun columnist and expert opinion maker extraordinaire, can lead us in the right direction. David, welcome back to your eighth visit on the podcast.
Number eight? Wow. We'll keep doing it till we get it right.
Number eight, it must be great.
It is a pleasure to return, especially since I don't know if this is the last one of the year or the next to last one, but it's always fitting to look back on the year that has passed. You know, those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it, and some things you don't want to repeat in 2023.
That is so true. So what is one of the big stories or the biggest stories that stick out to you from this year before we break down that list that I mentioned in the intro to the podcast?
Yeah, you know, from a Florida standpoint, I've been thinking that. But, you know, right now I got to admit my head is still in World Cup mode. And those are words I never thought that I would say because I'm not a big soccer fan. But I just happened to turn it on Sunday, the last match. And man, what an event that was. You didn't have to be a soccer fan to be sucked into that and just to know the ramifications and how, you know, I was, you know, one of 1 billion or 2 billion or 3 billion people watching this thing. You know, it's rare that you have something of that magnitude. And it was great TV. It was great everything. So I'm trying to put that aside and think more non-recency bias and look at the whole picture of the year and you know, especially in Florida. And yet it's sort of weird. There were some interesting stories, but none really jumped out at me. I don't know how you feel. I mean, there were, you know, one thing, you know, football always rules the roost here. And the thing I think that people, sports fans in general, especially in college towns or in the fall of college teams, they're just still trying to come to grips with the whole upheaval in college sports, with the portal and NIL and players getting paid. And, you know, this was the first year where you really saw the effects of that. And, you know, people's heads are really still spinning, trying to make that adjustment from, you know, quickly from the old days to the new days and all that pretends and all the consequences and unintended consequences about that that are really shaking the sport. You know, NFL wise, it's an interesting year. The finish is yet to be determined on it, but goodness knows there's been a lot of drama, and the three teams in Florida, you know, they haven't, you know, say this, you know, for the longest time you're like you would find at least one that wasn't worth watching. They've all three been worth watching for better and worse, you know, I mean, especially the last few weeks with what Jacksonville is doing, that's been, you know, sort of one of the, oh, people like Cinderella's, and that's one. But you know, a big picture, I don't know. It was a interesting year, a fun year. But I can't think of any overarching thing that in Florida that maybe because there wasn't a championship team you know, where you had a crowning moment and everybody goes, aha, that's where I was. But, you know, I'd say that unless there maybe a Florida kid was somehow playing for Argentina or France, and I don't think they were, you know, it's all just like I look back on 2023 in Florida and I just think, you know, it was fun, but it was a big transition year, especially when it comes to college sports.
Yeah. You know, first with the World Cup, I was driving home Sunday morning and I was watching, you know, checking on my phone, looking at the score. It was 1-0, then it was 2-0. I get home, there was about 70 minutes left in the game, and I'm like, yeah, I may as well just watch Argentina wrap this up. And then you see the two goals in 90 seconds in the overtime, and I was like, holy cow. And yeah, that was just, I missed the boring part of the game and made it home just for the amazing part, so I was pretty happy with that. But, you know, you mentioned, to me, the one story I think that had the most national talking, the thing that got the most attention, I think, was when Tua first had what looked like a concussion, and then on a Sunday against the Bills, and then on a Thursday against the Bengals, he absolutely gets crumpled, and you saw the hands lock up, and really that concussion discussion not only was a big national thing, but I also think it affected a lot of things, and I'll give you a couple of examples. There was the Florida game where I can't remember his name. He fell on the quarterback, and it was just a tackle. And, you know, it looked like Florida could tie the game. And they said, was it LSU, I think? And they said that, you know, he fell on him with his full weight. Well, that's a tackle. And then I can even give you an example. This past weekend in the NFL, there was a game where I think it might have even been the Jaguars game, where it looked like the quarterback was sacked. But because he didn't want to fall on him, he just stopped and the quarterback kept going. Maybe that was the Bucks-Bengals. But anyhow, guys are now becoming afraid to tackle quarterbacks because of that. And it all kind of started with that Tua hit. So that's the one that kind of stands out to me.
Yeah, it made the most arresting video because it was, you know, cause it was just, you know, sort of horrifying to see Tua go down like that. And you're thinking, oh, my God, you know, is this guy ever going to walk again? And then it was... It was such a relief to see him get up. And, you know, I mean, you know, if you'd have said that this was a guy who, you know, I just saw yesterday where he got the most Pro Bowl votes. You know, if you'd have said in September that Tua would get the most Pro Bowl votes, you go, no, you're crazy, man. I just want to see that guy, you know, lead a normal life. But, you know, I mean, the whole Tua thing is, yeah, that may be the most interesting story, and the Dolphins and what's going on down there. And stuff. But I mean, you're right. It has thrown the NFL, especially defensive linemen, into this you know, tizzy, because you don't know what you can do. Yeah, and it does trickle down to the colleges, and probably even the high school, because, you know, the NFL, you know, they have realized you got to have healthy quarterbacks or you don't have a good product, and you got to protect them. And that's, you know, that's not exactly new, but boy, the lengths that they're going to protect them now. I mean, yeah, pretty soon you might as well just put them in a red jersey out there all the time and say, you know, just no touch, or put, you know, put a flag on them. And, you know, if they do go running, break the pocket and go running around, you don't tackle them. You grab the flag. They're down, something like that. They are so protective of these guys. You know, that's not football. But you know, man, the whole game has changed in the last, you know, 15, 20, because I remember coming up. You know, I mean, heck, you probably remember the NFL was built on these collisions and they glorified it. And now, man, you know, every game is interrupted by a targeting call. Was it or wasn't it? And it is. I mean, it's changing. It had to change given the, you know, the carnage that was going. But, you know, and the quarterback thing, I don't know if we call it the Tua rule or just the Tua effect, that has developed into, you know, one of the biggest stories of the NFL this year.
Yeah, you know, I think I remember a segment on ESPN. I don't remember. It might have been Chris Berman and Tom Jackson. They used to show, like, the best collisions of the week, and it was always a linebacker destroying a receiver or something. And nowadays, boy, you see that, and you think, yeah, that guy's brain got rattled.
Well, I mean, we glorified that stuff, and it's still, you know, you see it, and it gets your blood pumping, and it's great stuff. But it's, you know, but then you go, oh man, this is like a guilty pleasure. I'm enjoying this while this, you know, I'm cheering this guy's brain got rattled. So it's been a metamorphosis, that's for sure.
Yep. And, you know, I guess for me, the number two story would probably have to be what's happened in Gainesville, only because of all of the weird things. So you get Billy Napier comes in to be the new head coach. You have Anthony Richardson, who's supposed to be this incredibly raw talent. He doesn't really live up to expectations, although he looks impressive at times. He looks terrible at times. And then he leaves to go to the NFL. you know, I'm curious what's going to happen when he gets drafted, because I hear the Colts like him among other teams. But then your backup quarterback, you know, gets arrested in some sort of federal sting, which is just awful. And then you have a bowl game where they are just absolutely embarrassed by Oregon State. So, you know, what's going on in Gainesville is certainly, I'm sure, not how Billy Napier hoped to begin his tenure there.
No, it really sort of went off a cliff the last few weeks. It's funny. They've been an up and down season, as you mentioned. You know, they rode the roller coaster that is Anthony Richardson, who, I mean, really is, you know, one of the most impressive, you know, physical, I hate to use the term physical specimen, but that's, you know, that's what, I mean, the guy, yeah, he has all the raw tools, but, and, you know, maybe, you know, maybe the most unfortunate thing to happen to him this year was that they went and beat Utah the first game and Richardson looked so good. And everybody thought, oh boy, here we go. We're right. And then your reality set in and he was still, yeah, he's still, as we say, a work in progress. You know, had some just incredible games, incredible plays, but then he would, yeah, then he would just miss the easiest passes and, but you know, he was basically, they had to ride him. They had nobody else. And so up and down they went, and they had a historically bad defense that didn't help. And, you know, all this gets back to, you know, that Billy Napier walked into, I think, a worse dumpster fire than most people knew. I mean, the between just the culture, which is a another buzzword here, like the culture of a program and the talent level, there were really problems here. And, you know, if you ask people at the start of the year, most people said, well, you know, 6 or 7 wins would be probably what most people said. You know, that's where they ended up. So now people are looking at that and said, oh, it was a disastrous year and all that. I don't think it was a disaster. It was not as good as people hoped. You know, the Vanderbilt loss, you can't really rationalize in any in any way. You just don't lose to Vanderbilt. And it made it worse is that, you know, Billy was the first coach to ever lose to every rival that they have, you know, and you're talking Georgia and FSU. And let's see, Tennessee, those are the three big ones. And then, you know, you could throw in LSU, but he's the first coach, I think, gosh, since ever to lose to them. Cause even when Charlie Pell was here, I don't think that they played Tennessee that year. So that's a team that went 0-10-1. So yeah, it did not go quite as people had hoped. And, you know, there's a learning curve. I think Napier, you know, he got out coached in a few games and he made some strange calls along the way. But it all gets down to, he said, you know, we're in the talent acquisition business. And his main task this year was to change the culture of the program and flip the roster. And I think he's done a good job on the first anyway. You know, all the players they've lost, I mean, they probably have of the 20, 25 that are in the portal, maybe one or two were actually going to play next year. So it's, you know, the portal is wide open and the recruiting is wide open. And so, you know, one thing they absolutely must get this coming year, at least in the next few weeks, is a quarterback. Because, you know, as you mentioned, they had played Jack Miller in the bowl game. And, you know, he's a guy transferred from Ohio State who hadn't, you know, even taken a snap since last October. And, you know, and Oregon State was a really good team, and given all the defections and all that, you know, basically that game went about as any you know, any rational person would have said, it went as expected. Maybe a little worse. Their offensive line was, which had been one of the strengths all year, just did not show up, mainly because one of the best, you know, their best player, Osiris Torrance, had opted out of the game. So, I mean, that was, I think, hitting bottom there. Napier at this point, you know, the honeymoon is definitely over, but it's like anybody else. You gotta give him at least two to three years to really get his program in place before you can render a judgment on whether it's a good one or not. But, so far, you know, the fans are like, okay, well, you know, we're not thrilled. You know, the rational fans saying we know he needs time. The other ones are saying, no, we got to get rid of him. Well, the administration is fully behind him, and they made way too much of an investment to pull the plug. And I think he deserves time. I think he's going to get it turned around eventually. But, you know, one thing they really need next year is to a quarterback, B, to beat a couple of rivals that they didn't do this year. at least one, and see, I don't care what it, you cannot lose to Vandy next year, because at that point, he will, you know, then the clock will, the seat will definitely go up to about 1,000 degrees.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he did get 6 wins in his first season, even amongst all of that awfulness. So, you know, as we'll talk about in a minute with Florida State, you know, patience really pays off. But actually, you know, Florida State, I wouldn't put as my number three story, and I hate to lean so football heavy on the stories of the year, but to me, number three in the state is what happened down for the Miami Hurricanes. You go out and you pilfer Mario Cristobal from Oregon. You give him this ridiculous, whatever it was, 8 or 10 years, $85 million or however much, you know, it's like $8.3 million a year, if I remember correctly, whatever it is. They go out and have their worst season pretty much ever. And you can't buy this guy out. He's looking like he, you know, look, you can give him a couple more years, but I just don't think he's the right fit down there. They went from having a nice spread offense under Manny Diaz. Tyler Van Dyke was coming into his own. You know, they almost didn't fire Diaz. Then they do. Then they bring in Cristobal, and he just runs the most mundane offense. So I don't know what he's looking to do down there in Miami, but to me, the number three story of the year has to do with the Hurricanes and how they were not just bad, but historically bad under a guy that was supposed to come in and fix things.
Yeah. Tell you what, that Florida State game, you know, that was about as so if you're a Miami fan, that may have been the lowest point of your life coming in and that, because it just really laid bare the problems. You know, as many problems, you know, woes as Florida had up here, at least they were competitive in almost every game until the bowl game. And, you know, Miami, they didn't even belong on the field with a lot of those teams. And it's hard to believe that they were, the talent level was that bad or gotten that low. You know, the knock on Diaz, of course, Cristobal has always been, of course, you know, the guy can recruit, but can he coach? And so far we're that is still lingering out there. We're seeing he can recruit, and that's another storyline is how they're recruiting it so well, and you know, how they have really sort of masterminded the whole NIL thing. And so they're getting players. He's getting players, but you know, he definitely needs to step it up on the X and O aspect of it. And you know, if I'm a Miami fan, I am looking at that and that contract. So especially if I'm an administrator, I'm thinking, holy God, this could turn into like Jimbo Fisher squared. You know, where every time Texas A&M lost this year, everybody's saying, well, gosh, you can't buy out Jimbo because he's got, you owe him $90 million. Well, yeah, there, and that's Texas A&M, where you know money gushes out of the ground. You know that if this doesn't improve next year, you know, I mean, my goodness, I don't know, Miami, they might as well just join the Big Sky conference or something, because it's going to be ugly. But again, patience. You know, you got to give the guy time to get his programs up and his players in there. So. Yeah, but it tell you what, that first year, from what you see from the on the field product, you just say, you know, if I'm a Miami fan, I'm scratching my head and going, have we really stepped into this time?
Yeah, very true. I mean, I don't know. I watched some of their games and they were just head scratchers. And, you know, so as far as Florida's sunk, at least they have Miami to make them look not as bad with their new first year head coach. So, you know, then I move. Okay, our first three stories have been a little bit negative. You know, Tua getting hurt, Florida struggling, Miami struggling. Number four, there I would put Florida State. I think that, you know, look, they were down for, you know, terribly the 5 years prior. And Mike Norvell, people were wondering about him. And even midseason, you know, they start off, I think they were 5-0. They lost 3 in a row to ranked teams, and then they pretty much won out. They get 9 wins. You know, they'd love to have a couple of those games back because, you know, they lost a couple of close ones. Clemson was really the only game where they didn't look all that good. And but now you hear Jordan Travis is coming back next year because he would have been a low-round pick in the NFL draft. So, you know, they quickly, I think, become a contender in the ACC. And do you see them, you know, now could they overtake Clemson? Can they, you know, get back to that spot where you're used to seeing Florida State?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. It is nice to talk nice about a team, you know, and especially FSU, because it has been so hard to say something nice the past few years. But you know, this is one of those cases where patience has paid off, because you know, I mean, Mike Norvell, they were ready to run him out of town, you know, the last couple of years, because it was such a rough start. And he you know, talk about walking into, you know, a tire fire. You know, that was Tallahassee, you know, circa 2019. And then he came in the COVID year, which really, you know, just set things back even further. And then, you know, I remember last signing day when they had the number one recruit, you know, Travis Hunter. And then at the last second, boom, you know, Coach Prime comes in and sweeps away to Jackson State. And, you know, maybe the most shocking story in recruiting day history, when the number one player in the country, who, you know, you had locked up for years, I always wanted to be a Knoll based on, you know, the, you know, brought up in the glory days, and suddenly he's going to Jackson State. You know, that was just a gut punch. But yeah, you know, I tell you what, Norvell, he is one resilient sucker, and he has put in the time and the effort and the work, and you're starting to see it pay off there in Tallahassee. And you know, I was at that Florida State game at the end, you know, and it was, you know, the atmosphere was just tremendous. It was like the glory days when both teams were playing, you know, top 10, top five clashes. You know, I don't think, I mean, realistically, you know, FSU fans will always long for the dynastic days of Bowden. I don't, you know, that's asking a lot. I don't think Mike Norvell is Bobby Bowden. I don't know if anybody short of Saban is going to get it going like that. But I think it's pretty evident now that, you know, the program is on good footing. Last week I saw where they broke ground on a new $100 million football facility. And yeah, it's sort of funny. I think, you know, Real took a veiled shot at Clemson. He said, you know, we don't, you know, this is all about football. We don't have a lazy river or a putt-putt course here like Clemson does, you know. So I you like to see that. I mean, yeah, they will definitely, you know, be a player now, I think, in the ACC. You know, but Clemson's not going anywhere. They've, you know, suffered. They haven't been the Clemson of old the last couple of years. But I mean, that's always going to be a top 10 program. But now you think, if you're an FSU fan, you know, you feel, you know, for the first time, you know, gosh, since really, you know, the early Jimbo days, you're feeling good about the program again, and you have reason to. And as I said, a lot of it does get back to Jordan Travis. I mean, the kid, you know, he was the difference in that Florida State game. The guy, I've never seen such a Houdini act, guy getting out of trouble and spinning around and making plays that he could make. So just him alone, you know, he's going to make them next year, probably a 10-win team. They should, barring, you know, something crazy. And plus he's going to make them very watchable. So, I mean, yeah. So kudos to Tallahassee. I mean, but as I said, that is the evidence of, you know, if you're just patient and let, you know, you let the guy come in and do what you hire him to do, this is what you get.
Yeah. And, you know, with Jordan Travis, he went from being in 2021 a quarterback known for his legs. This year, he was a really good thrower, and people had him as high as maybe a fifth or fourth round draft pick. So he's a guy who next year, if he has a stellar season, you could see him, you know, considered in the second round or third round. I'm not sure, you know, he would probably have to do something stellar to get up to that number, you know, a first round pick. But, you know, I think he's going to improve his draft stock with a really good year next year. And I think it was smart of him to come back. So, you know, that'll be a fun one to watch. Now, the number five story, I'd kind of go with a 5A and a 5B, and we still have to stick with the NFL here. And we'll talk maybe a little baseball and hockey and basketball, but I just feel like football, you know, it's the dominant thing. It's the thing most people read and watch. So, you know, I'll go 5A being the Jacksonville Jaguars, because here's a team who had the Urban Meyer disaster last year. Trevor Lawrence came in, and Doug Peterson even said, it's like I'm dealing with a rookie. You know, Lawrence, even though he played 17 games last year, he had no guidance, and the poor guy was out there throwing for his life. Still got 3,600 yards. But now here they are. They're a team that's raging forward. All of their losses but one have been by one score. They're one game out of the playoff hopes, and they play the Titans at the end of the year. They had the number one draft pick again in Trayvon Walker this year. A lot's going right for the Jaguars, and Doug Peterson seems to have that thing going in the right direction. So I think after the Lions, they've got to be, you know, like you said, the Cinderella story of the year.
Nope. Yeah. You know, I guess, yeah, it's safe to say now that the Urban thing was not a good thing, and that the program and the whole franchise is in better hands now with Doug Peterson. Yeah, it is amazing what, you know, what a difference he has made, and how people say, well, he changed, you know, it took him a while to change. You know, the culture was so bad. I think they were just so happy. You know, it was so toxic there that anybody would have come in and players would have responded to a more NFL savvy coach, which is what Peterson obviously is. You know, I didn't know that Lawrence. We always knew Lawrence had all the skills and all that, but you know, man, the last 4 weeks, he has turned into Dan Marino. You know, I think 15 TDs, one interception. It's just remarkable, and it's good to see it for Jacksonville. You know, because I grew up there, and you know, this is a team that that unlike a lot of these other NFL places, you know, even Miami, there are other things that fans can turn their attention to. Although in Miami, unfortunately, all you can turn your attention to is maybe the Marlins or the Hurricanes. So maybe, you know, you don't want to turn your attention to them. But, you know, Jacksonville, it's Jags or nothing. And they've been wandering the desert for a long time now. And to see this finally come around, it's really nice to see. And you know, just the buzz that's going on and how when the Jags are doing well, how that whole team or that whole city and Duval County, as they say, just responds to it. And it's so emotionally invested in that team. It's really good to see what's going on there. And yeah, I mean, it's not a fluke. I mean, you can tell. I mean, I think, you know, if there was an open draft now of NFL players and who you would take, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, you know, he would be, you know, you go, you know, Mahomes and maybe a couple other guys, but, you know, he would be one of the top five players that you build your franchise around at this point. And so, I mean, and with Peterson, he obviously the man knows what he's doing. He's got a Super Bowl in his hip pocket. So, I mean, they are, you know, they are looking set for a good long time now, especially, you know, considering the status of the rest of that AFC South.
Yeah. And this past week when they had that amazing comeback against the Dallas Cowboys, you know, it almost looked like they were going to lose it. Trevor Lawrence, he had a bad fumble where and he's learning lessons as he goes. He should have just slid. He runs for a first down and decides he's going to try a spin move with a linebacker coming at him, and the ball just gets knocked out of his hand. Those are little learning lessons, but then he remains poised. He has a minute and a half, gets the team within field goal range. They go into overtime, and then they end up winning it on that amazing interception. But, you know, Lawrence, you're right. I mean, he's going to break 4,000 yards this year, and he's just so much better in year two. And so that one's going to be fun to watch. And the other big story that I would go with 5B for the state, sticking with the NFL, is the Buccaneers. Because, again, here you have a team that is, I believe they're 6-8 maybe. And they're in first place because they've got 5-9 teams and 4-10 teams behind them. And, you know, Brady really hadn't been the problem until this past game when he had 4 turnovers. But, you know, that team's just not very good. The defense isn't good. You know, if Brady didn't have Mike Evans, he would have nothing. So, you know, what do you see going on down there? And can you imagine this team could still host a playoff game?
Yeah, yeah. In a way, it's sort of cruel to keep dangling it out there because people think, all right, well, maybe it'll kick in, because it was just 2 years ago these were Super Bowl champs. And, you know, that maybe that, you know, that mojo will kick back in. And like you said, I mean, Brady hadn't, you know, this isn't Brady circa 2017, but, you know, he's still, you know, a top 10 quarterback. But between the injuries and just, you know, like, I mean, they did sign Julio. Did they sign Julio Jones or Julio Jones's father this year? I'm not sure, but holy, you know, just he's had no help, and that defense has just been atrocious, as you said. And so you keep it'll kick in, but I mean, bottom line, this is just not a good team. You know, as Dennis Green, a famous, you are what your record says you are. I mean, they are, you know, a legitimate 6-8 team, you know, and a losing team, but. Yeah, they, you know, they may just stagger into the playoffs, and people think, well, you know, sometimes you don't want to play that team. Wild got nothing to lose. Well, you do want to play the Bucs in the first round if you're a team, because it's just hard to see that it's going to kick in. And, you know, I mean, long, big picture, you just wonder how much more, you know, the whole Brady soap opera can go. I mean, it's been fun. It's, you know, he's made the Bucs relevant, and you know, it was obviously the fact that he bought him a world championship. It was a great move, and you know, hats off to them. But now you just wondered if, you know, if it's the soap opera's just sort of played out, and I just don't see him being there next year. I think, you know, it's time for just to turn the page on this whole thing and start anew. I mean, goodness knows where they go for a quarterback, but it may be time for a rebuild, because it just seems like, you know, we've seen the sort of like the last days of Rome, and the whole city's burning now.
Will the Kyle Trask era ever begin?
Well, yeah, that's the question. You just think, you were thinking, well, there's no way, you know, Trask's got to sit there and be the apprentice for 2 years, but you just heard so little from that, you wonder, well, gosh, you know, they must not have a lot of confidence in him. They've had him for, you know, that he's not even, you know, the number two guy. If you're a GM, you're their GM, you got a lot of work to do in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Meanwhile, down in Brazil, you know, Brady's ex-wife Gisele is posting 10 pictures of her looking relaxed and wonderful in the beautiful weather. And meanwhile, he just looks absolutely miserable as he's, you know, losing in a way that he's never lost before. So,
yeah, I tell you, Tim, that may be the most remarkable thing about 2023 is that, you know, given Tom Brady and his status as a world person, says that, you know, you actually sort of feel sorry for the guy sometimes, you know, because, you know, when you, as rich as he is and as, you know, I mean, this is TB12, for Christ's sake, you know, he rules the world. But you saw him after that San Francisco game last week. And, you know, he went in there, he didn't even show, he looked almost like a homeless guy in there and gaunt. And he didn't take a shower on the way, you know, for that cross country flight back. And you picture him, well, you know, he went home to the bat, you know, and his family in there. So would he open up a can of cold beans, you know, or a frozen dinner? And you know, it just, you go, man, you're Tom Brady, you know, this shouldn't be happening to you. But yeah, I you know, they're about, you know, if there are 5 billion people on earth, there are about 4.999999 billion people who you should feel sorry for before Tom Brady. But sometimes here, I've actually said, man, poor guy.
You make it sound like he's going to show up to the game next week carrying a bindle with fingerless gloves on. But, you know, maybe he's thinking, gosh, that could be me down in Brazil, tanned and looking healthy with Gisele, instead of miserable here getting creamed by 300-pound guys half my age.
I know. And the whole Gisele thing, you know, how, you know, that played into his the turmoil, and you know, she was the one, you know, who didn't want to play, but he did. And so, you know, now that's taken care of, he doesn't have that issue of, well, I gotta stay home, my wife's nagging me to retire. But, you know, he didn't have that nagging, but now he's probably thinking, well, you know, it may be time to retire anyway. I don't know, you know, you hear all sorts of scenarios, and you know, the what will Tom Brady do question, you know, is sort of like the most favorite parlor game in the off season, you know, on every you know, sports talk and blog and everything. We don't know, but that's, you know, it's going to be very interesting what happens with him in the next, you know, after this season, which, you know, if it does go into the playoffs, I would bet heavily that that's where it ends, that on that game.
Well, right now it's looking like they would play the Cowboys in the first round. They beat them in the first game of the season. And the Cowboys reeling a little bit after losing to Jacksonville. They get the Eagles coming up, but they may not have Jalen Hurts, who had some sort of, you know, shoulder surgery on Monday. So, it's going to be interesting. But can you imagine if he makes it in, limps in with a 7-10 record, and then they go on a run and make it to like the NFC Championship? But it wouldn't surprise me. That's the thing.
Yeah. It would surprise me, but I would love to see it, because you always pull for a great story. And man, you know, if Tom Brady did do that and pull it off, yeah, you know, this would definitely be the year, right off into the sunset, Tom, you know, right off into your $360 million contract with Fox Network, whatever it says. But because it, you know, you will never top this, will go down if he can, you know, I don't even want to mention the word Super Bowl, but if he could win a couple playoff games, and you know, based on what they have done so far, you know, it may go down as one, you know, one of the greatest accomplishments in the history of mankind.
And you're right, David. I completely forgot about the $360 million waiting for him. I do feel bad for him. So the last football topic I'll touch on is UCF. You worked at the Orlando Sentinel for quite some time. You know, you're a guy who's seen this team, and they're going to be moving to the Big 12. They did well this year, lost to Tulane in the AAC Championship, lost one game they shouldn't have during the season, but, you know, they look like they're on the up. So what are your feelings on UCF and their big move coming up?
It still sounds weird to me to say UCF Big 12. Yeah, it just... it doesn't sound right, but it tell you what, it was definitely, you know, the right move. And they were, you gotta tip your hat to them for getting a position that when it came time to expand, that they were a team that was attractive to conferences like the Big 12. You know, I remember, you mean, you're right, when I was working or I got to Orlando in 2000, or actually 1999, and just as for kicks one day, it was their homecoming week, and I went out to UCF campus, and I just asked like the first 20 students I saw, you know, what they thought of the homecoming game and everything, and like 19 of them didn't even know they had a game, you know, said, really? But they underwent this, you know, this big football emphasis program, and it has really paid off for them. And, you know, they have been, you know, arguably the best program in the state the last 5 years. I mean, a lot of it's because the other three big programs are so bad, or, you know, had so many downers. But, you know, I mean, Malzahn, obviously, he's a proven coach, and they will be a competitor in the Big 12. I think, you know, the big difference is, you know, in the AAC, there were always going to be a couple of gimmies on that schedule. And, you know, there won't be that in the Big 12. I mean, if you look up and down, I mean, yeah, not everybody is TCU, but between the, you know, the schedule and just the travel and the adjustment, it's going to be, you know, they're stepping up a bit in competition, obviously. But they are ready. I don't think that they're, as they say, you know, they put these billboards all over the state saying, you know, UCF is the future of football. I don't think they're exactly the future of football, but they are definitely part. You know, they're a legitimate school now. And, you know, if you'd have told me that 20 years ago, and just interviewing those, you know, those 20 kids on campus that say, what? I don't get that at all. But it's definitely changed. It's good to see. And, you know, you contrast that with USF, which is basically in the same position 15 years ago. They did not emphasize football in the way that UCF did. They didn't build a on-campus site, which was a key thing. And they made a couple a series of bad hires that just, you know, really when they were hiring coaches for a while. And you know, came time to expand. Nobody was interested in them. And now, you know, UCF is going to be getting, you know, probably a $40 to $50 million check every year for media rights. And, you know, poor USF, you know, they're going to be lagging $30, $35 million behind that. And I don't know how you're going to make up for that, because, you know, that buys a lot of NIL, you know, that funds a lot of NIL and a lot of other facilities and stuff like that. Yeah. But it's, you know, you got to say, yeah, they, you know, hats off to UCF for pulling this off. And, you know, I think, you know, but the day UCF raises the Big 12 championship thing, I'm going to think, man, you know, the world is definitely gone upside down.
Well, you mentioned USF. USF, what year was it? 2007. They were number two in the nation, or 2008. I mean, there was a time where they had really rocketed up there. And you're right, boy, how that program's fallen. But UCF, it'll be interesting, because with the Big 12 this year, I mean, Kansas, which was the worst program for a decade, the transfer portal turned that around. Kansas State, you know, major air raid defense. You've got TCU, although Max Duggan, I like to call him Hacksaw Max Duggan, he's leaving for the NFL after this year. So, but still, I mean, you're right. Oklahoma State always has a potent offense, so they're going to be putting up with a lot more there. So that's going to be fun to watch some of those UCF games next year. All right, David, we're going to touch on just a couple more things before we wrap it up. Number one is Major League Baseball. You know, the Rays made the playoffs, yet you almost never hear from them. You know, the Marlins, they had a Cy Young Award winner, even though they were terrible. They fired Don Mattingly. So, you know, should the Marlins just be relegated to AAA?
You know, I think the whole state of Florida should be relegated to AAA when it comes to baseball. It's just sad to see, because, you know, when the Major League expanded to Florida, gosh, now 25 years, you know, the thought was, it's just natural, you know, it's gonna take off here. The number of retirees who love baseball, who came up from, you know, came here from the north, and they're gonna cling to these teams and identify. And, you know, we found out pretty early on that even if you win a world championship, which the Marlins did, you don't become a thing down in Miami. And you know, they've tried, you know, everybody got excited, you know, when the whole Jeter regime came in and that didn't work out. And, you know, this year, ugh, you know, it's just, they just, again, just fell on their face. And it's just sad to see, because it's I think that Miami and Tampa have proven they're just not good baseball markets. Tampa, it's a shame, because unlike Miami, you know, they've had just good ownership, and they have proven to be, you know, one of the smartest, most efficient management and ownership groups, and putting a good product out there of any major league team, especially considering what they, you know, the salary structure that they have to work with. But yeah, it's just, it's that nobody gets, just meets with a big yawn year, and has been, and that yawn's been going on for 20 years now. Doesn't matter what they do. And yeah, and you know, the story is always in Tampa now is, you know, will they move? Well, they won't move. They've had this lease there, you know, that's kept them in the trop for till 2027, and that's been going on forever. And but, you know, finally they're seeing the light at the end of that tunnel, and there's more talk. Well, are they going to build a new stadium here? I saw this last week. They floated, you know, I think the 103rd plan to build one in Tampa or on the site, and you know, they got to do something. I mean, it's crazy when you think, just, you know, a year ago they're thinking, well, should we split 82 games with, you know, play half of them in Tampa or St. Pete and half of them in Montreal? Anything to keep it going. So that to me is the overarching story. It's just that, you know, it doesn't matter what these teams do. People just don't care. It's sad in a way, you know, because, you know, I have a bit, but, you know, they still, you know, the people who they thought would become Braves fans or Marlins fans, now they remain Red Sox fans, Yankees fans, and everything else. And so, yeah, it's just, I think Florida has proven that, you know, this year, just keeping just from a whole statewide basis, that, you know, when it comes to MLB, it's just a big song, yawn, ho-hum. We just don't care.
I'm a big fan of the Marlins AAA team in Jacksonville, the Jumbo Shrimp. That's just a great name for a minor league baseball team. And, you know, you talk about Tampa Bay. I would love to see them put the stadium out kind of near where the Hard Rock is, because then you're on the outskirts of Tampa. You don't have to drive into the heavy traffic or try to get to St. Pete where they currently play, because it's really hard to get there. Plus, afterward, you can go to the Hard Rock. So, you know, it just would make sense to put it in a more accessible place. I think more people would get there. But you're right, you know, it's probably going to languish because they're never going to have a huge budget, them or the Marlins. So they'll keep, you know, winning the division. And, you know, maybe the Rays will win a World Series every 15 years and people will be happier than Cubs fans.
Yeah, Cubs fans, they will show up at Wrigley Field, you know, regard or whatever, just about, you know, man, if you're not winning, you know, in Miami, you're not going to get any. But, you know, if you are winning in Tampa, they still don't show up. it's just that's just the way we found out. That is just an immutable law of Florida. Is it when, you know, is it when people just shrug when it comes to Major League Baseball, at least the homegrown teams.
And, you know, the other thing down there in Tampa is you have the Lightning, who again went to the Stanley Cup Finals this past year. This year they didn't win. But, you know, what is that, 3 years in a row they've made it. I don't follow hockey as a huge fan, but it's got to drive people in Canada and up in the Northeast crazy that Florida and Dallas and Colorado have become your best hockey towns.
Oh, yeah. It's funny in a way, because, you know, the Lightning, they do create a big buzz in Tampa. I mean, when they get it going, the city gets behind them and everything. But it's funny, outside of, you know, the Hillsborough, Pinellas County area, yeah, it is a whisper. You don't hear much about it from any. You know, I mean, I you know, you turn on the radio in June and during the Stanley Cup finals and all that, and, you know, 98% of it is talking about you know, well, you know, who's going to be. Who's going to be Miami's quarterback? Who's, you know, we're just a football centric state, and it must kill, yeah, the people in Canada, because, you know, the success and the failure of the Lightning, you know, resonates much more, and has, you know, I think they pay much more attention up there, you know, in Alberta than they do in, you know, Tallahassee or anywhere outside of just that area. And I'm sort of with you on hockey. I was raised in the South. It's an exciting thing, except, you know, I've yet to actually be able to see the puck, you know, on TV. It just moves too fast. I don't get it. But I know but, you know, it's the same soccer type thing where, you know, you get, it's very exciting when, and the whole shootout and the playoff thing. And as far as far as just the athlete and the toughness that these guys have, you got to respect all that. I mean, it's a great sport. I don't mean to denigrate the sport at all, but you know, still, we are just a football centric state is what it amounts to. And you know, you think of how if they could take that team and put it in Alberta or Winnipeg or something like that, man, they would own the whole, they would own the province. But here, you know, it's a tree falling in the woods.
So true. Well, before we wrap it up, David, I'll let you give some final thoughts. We haven't really talked much about college basketball. I don't know if you want to say anything there. We're a hot spot for pickleball here in the state, you know, maybe a little soccer, MLS. What you got?
I think that, you know, I mean, pickleball, it's crazy how that has taken off, you know, I mean, and you see it and you say, well, why not? It's fun. It's like tennis, except you don't need to be, you know, in nearly as good a shape. You're not having to run around nearly as much. And you see all these, you know, athletes investing in it. And well, I'll say one thing, it's going to be better than investing in crypto, which all these athletes told you to do this year. And pickleball is fun. I don't know if it'll ever, you know, ever be a big spectator sport. And you have to develop stars and stuff like that. I mean, I think that people would rather, you know, maybe if you put Giselle and Tom out there, you know, playing against each other, people might tune in, sort of like have a Harry Megan effect to the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, pickleball is fun. You know, college basketball, the most interesting story to me this year, I mean, was how, you know, Florida's coach Mike White went to Georgia and people were happy about it. You know, if that had been football, it would have caused a civil war, you know, but here it's like, okay, we'll move on. You know, it's interesting, you know, college basketball, it's like everything, you know, the other sports and that, you know, some sports where you just, the regular season, just sort of okay, but you know, everybody becomes a college basketball fan in March, and you know, from a state standpoint, yeah, I mean, Miami's looking pretty good so far, which I'm thank goodness, because you know, you want Hurricane fans to have something that they can be happy about these days. And you know, Florida State, Leonard Hamilton, guy, I think he's been there what 20 some odd years now, and I don't think they're as bad as they look so far. Florida, who knows? I mean, Todd Golden starting out and all that. I mean, he's young, he looks 12 years old. But he's sharp. I think he'll get it going here. But you know, again, I think outside those the campuses that they play in, people would, you know, they would just sort of shrug till March Madness comes along, and then people pay attention to that. You know, otherwise, I would like to fill you in on, you know, getting back to the whole soccer thing, what's going on with the MLS teams. But I'll admit I don't really follow. I'm not really sure what happened with the Orlando Lions this year. And maybe you can tell me, is Beckham playing for Miami or what's going on down there?
No, I think he's a part owner down there. I don't think he's playing.
Okay. Well, I think maybe he would come out of retirement just to goose the attendance or hey, you know, when you think of guys you'd want to be on this earth, you know, two of the top five would probably be Brady and Beckham, you know, just from a dude standpoint. So maybe maybe that's Tom's next move. Maybe he can just switch over to you know, because there's all those rumors last year that he was going to go play for Miami, you know, and of course Stephen Ross and they got all fined for tampering and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, he was supposedly building a home down there. I don't know if he still is with the divorce and all that, but you know, and that would be interesting to see. You know, it put Miami on the map. They always want to go for the big celebrity splash down there. So, you know, have Tom and Beckham on the front line. That would get World Cup type ratings.
Actually, I think they want to try and get Ronaldo down in Miami. But boy, could you imagine the perfume commercial that Beckham and Ronaldo could do together?
Oh boy, you're right. if those suede robes bathrobes could talk, my goodness, they would have some stories to tell.
Well, we could round things out by talking about how I will close the year with a 175 bowling average, but we'll take that up next time, David.
Yeah. Well, it's a start. You're right. We didn't talk PBA. Probably a good thing, because I wouldn't have much to say other than, you know, Fred Flintstone is still probably the greatest bowler I've ever seen.
Yeah, Walter Ray Williams, who is the best bowler of all time, or one of the two best bowlers of all time, he lived in Ocala forever. He's probably still there. So there you go. But that's all I got on bowling. So anyhow, David, tell people where they can find you, follow you on social media. Where can they find you? Well, Gainesville Sun and Gainesville.com, but where can they find you if they want to follow along with you?
Twitter would be David E. Whitley. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, it's been a fun year. Yeah. I think as I said, in some things you want to repeat, some things you don't. And I guess that's true with every year, but, you know, I've enjoyed the mini podcast with you. I can't believe it's already 8, but we'll do it again in 2023.
That's right. I'm coming up on the 100th podcast today. You are on episode 93, which is cool. And next time I think I'll have you, and you people out there in the audience can think of this too. What are the top 5 songs that you hear when walking through the aisles at Publix? Because I think Hootie and the Blowfish is one that I hear more than any else.
Yeah, hear a lot of that, and also Huey Lewis and the News.
Ooh, that's a good Publix band.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just because of the name Hootie and the whatever, you know, Huey Lewis and the, but whoever is in charge of Muzak obviously has a thing for the 80s. You know, it's probably graduated from high school about 1987.
Yeah, very true. Sheryl Crow, too. I hear All I Want to Do Is Have Some Fun when I'm in the aisles of public. So anyhow, we can break that down next time. David, I really do appreciate it. I hope you have a happy and safe New Year's, and I look forward, like you said, talking to you again in 2023.
All right, Tim. Sounds good.
All right, and that's going to do it for this episode of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. I'm Tim Walters, and to quote the English poet T.S. Eliot, "For last year's words belong to last year's language, and next year's words await another voice." I couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for joining us, and Happy New Year.